Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Sunday, May 4th, 2014. You are listening to Studio 7 coming from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us this Sunday evening from Washington. I'm Sandra Nyaira. Among our top stories this evening, ZANU-PF, which is accused by the opposition in the West of manipulating the electoral processes in the country, sends four lawmakers to observe elections in South Africa this week.
We are obviously grateful that this honor has been extended to ZANU-PF. It's a serious acknowledgement of our expertise, of our experience, of our capability to handle election matters.
The Federation of African Media Women in Zimbabwe says much needs to be done to level the playing field and remove obstacles affecting women journalists in the country.
We are in the process of engaging, lobbying the media industry, especially the various media houses, in order for them to come up with a gender-sensitive working environment.
And rural teachers flock to a new association claiming the Progressive Teachers Union and others are failing to represent them. President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF has dispatched a four-member delegation to observe this week's elections in South Africa, the country's fourth democratic polls scheduled for May 7. Deputy Party spokesperson Psychology Maziwisa told Studio 7 Deputy Women's Affairs Minister Abigail Damasani will head the delegation. But critics have been questioning South Africa's invite to Harare for election observers, saying recent elections in Zimbabwe have not been transparent and were often accompanied by violence. More than 25 million South Africans are expected to elect a president and members of the National Assembly and provincial councils in the eagerly awaited polls on Wednesday. Reporter Jonga Kandemiri speaks with ZANU-PF's Psychology Maziwisa on the issue.
Well, a number of things there. It doesn't surprise us as a party. We are a party that has come a long way. We are a party that is full of experience. We've been through a lot in the political field. We've got a lot of experience. This is not the first time, anyway, that we've been invited for such purposes. But we are obviously grateful that this honor has been extended to ZANU-PF. It's a serious acknowledgement of our expertise, of our experience, of our capability to handle election matters. So we are absolutely grateful. And you've got also to understand that ZANU-PF and the ANC share a massive, a huge, a long a history of good relations. Both of them belong to that, renowned section of liberation movement. And we've always walked hand in hand. We've always assisted each other to the best of our abilities, wherever we can. And I think this is one such instance.
This gesture comes at a time when some sections in the country criticize your party in the manner they allege it handles elections in Zimbabwe. What do you have to say about this?
People are always going to criticize. And if you worry yourself about what people say, I don't think that you will be able to focus on developmental issues, things that really matter. And we've also got to analyze, when these people criticize, who these people are, what their objectives, intentions are. And more often than not, especially as it relates to ZANU-PF, when it comes to Zimbabwe, the idea, the notion is always to smear the good name of Zimbabwe, the good name of President Mugabe, certainly the good name of the party, ZANU-PF, with the intention of obviously causing alarm outside of Zimbabwe, within the international community, and getting people to speak negatively about Zimbabwe. But that doesn't bother us anymore. People have always said that, but here we are. We continue to stand. We always worry about the facts. And the fact is that ZANU-PF has been invited to come and cover an election as huge, as important as the election that is taking place in South Africa on May 7th.
That was the ZANU-PF Deputy Spokesman Psychology Maziwisa in Harare. This weekend, the Zimbabwean media joined the rest of the international community in marking World Press Freedom Day. The Federation of African Media Women in Zimbabwe, FAMS, says while gains have been made in changing the media landscape in the country lately, more needs to be done to clear the hurdles faced by women journalists in newsrooms. I spoke with Abigail Gamanya, who is the FAMS director, earlier on.
As media women in Zimbabwe, we are still faced with some key gender issues in our newsrooms. As you will note, Sandra, the media in Zimbabwe is very much male-dominated. Actually, as I'm talking to you now, we are actually at a meeting where we've gathered the female journalists and the Women's Movement of Zimbabwe, where we are discussing how the media and civic society can consolidate and strengthen our relationships in terms of how we work together. And some of the complaints that are coming across is that still, even 30 years after independence and Zimbabwe being one of the most educated countries in Africa, if not the world, we still have our women being portrayed as, you know, objects, and our issues are still very much trivialized through the media.
What are you doing as the Federation of African Media Women in Zimbabwe, together with other media watchdogs in the country, in terms of trying to address the issues that you are raising?
We are in the process of engaging and lobbying the media industry, especially the various media houses, be it the mainstream media houses, community newspapers in Zimbabwe, in order for them to come up with a gender-sensitive working environment, as we have been receiving many complaints from female journalists, in particular students on internship who are facing various forms of gender discrimination in our newsrooms. But also what we've also noted is that most of our media houses do not have gender policies, except maybe for Zim papers that is gender policies. But even then, in newsrooms that have these gender policies, you'll notice that not every journalist is aware or alive to the fact that these gender policies are there and how they can best utilize these policies to their advantage as workers.
That was FAMS Director Abigail Gamanya in Harare. The new Rural Teachers Union in Zimbabwe says a membership drive is gathering momentum as rural teachers have begun moving away from unions such as the Progressive Teachers Union they claim have failed to properly represent them. The RTUZ says most union leaders have become too political and in the process are failing to articulate the wishes and desires of ordinary members as they cultivate their own political journeys. The most affected, says the RTUZ president, Obert Masaraure, our rural teachers, he says, are being marginalized and living in pathetic conditions.
Our organization is offering services to prospective and members and the full members. So it is attracting huge numbers of teachers because they realize that we have tangible things to offer, which they never accessed in the past when they used to access only diaries and t-shirts from their unions. It is so easy for them to realize that union, this is now unionism with a difference. We are offering packages, we are offering tangible things and that never really thought they would access from a union, from housing schemes, from counseling for those who are victims of political violence. So really, the work is not that much because we are offering a lot of services. So the teachers naturally are attracted to the organization.
We understand that most of your members are disgruntled members of other organizations. May you tell us the reasons why, including yourself, you decided to leave former unions and organizations to form Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe?
The other organization has become that functional. If you would follow the process of salary negotiations that was underway, there was no negotiation because they were only offered something by government and they were just told to take it or release it. So you realize that the reasons why unionism is now dead, maybe we start with the partisan approach that was assumed by some of the leaders in those unions.
That was President Obet Masaraure of the Rural Teachers Union in Zimbabwe. But Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Raymond Majongwe dismisses the RTUZ's claims, saying his union has done an excellent job in representing its members.
As far as we are concerned, we have been able to retain our membership, and we're going out on the recruitment drives, and the members are joining us, and we remain the vibrant revolutionary militant organization. Those who are saying that have no clue about what trade unionism in Zimbabwe is all about. We welcome them to the party and we wish them well, but they must not be under any illusion that people are going to join them because they retain a name of a geographical location. Who would want to be called a rural teacher? In other words, people are failing to understand and grasp. There's nobody called the rural teacher to start off with. There are teachers in the rural area, and the teachers' plight is the same. And the people must know that dividing and the splitting of the areas will not solve the problem. What are people going to say when they're going to have a motivation to know the teachers association? When they're going to have a Nikalin teachers association? I think people need to understand. The moment we want to fight personalities, we are not going to conquer.
That was Secretary General Raymond Majongwe of the Progressive Teachers Union from Harare on the line with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
And now it is time for us to go to the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo, our very own youth here at the Studio 7 in Washington, D.C.
Listening to the Youth Forum, your forum focusing on your issues. Today, I'm gladly joined by Wellington Zindowe, who is the coordinator of the Zimbabwe Youth Forum. Wellington, thank you so much again for joining me as usual. It's good to have you back.
Thank you, Tatenda.
Now, as we look at May Day, which passed by this week, let's focus on issue of youth and unemployment. Of course, we know many youth are unemployed in the country, but they're still able to get by. What are they doing? How are they able to still sustain themselves?
I think as you have rightly pointed out, we are seeing that youth unemployment is one of the biggest problems in the country. And I think the coping mechanisms are largely some of them negative. If you look at particularly young women, you see some of them are being forced into, you know, prostitution for survival. And the majority of whom are also, you know, into cross-border trading. But I think I would like to quickly point out that I think most of young people in the country are actually in the formal sector at the present moment as they try to make ends meet. But I think largely, I think like it was also pointed out by the IMF and ARPA, you know, international organizations, generally Zimbabweans are surviving at less than $1 a day, which means I think we are actually very poor lot, especially that is being raised by, you know, unemployment in the country.
What has driven youth to push and be innovative? Because, you know, looking at the case of Zimbabwe, it's a very interesting case where when everything kind of went down, when the economy went down, people were still able to find the way around it.
I think as you can see that currently at the moment in Zimbabwe, young people are selling almost anything that they come across. So there is a lot of, you know, selling or rather trading of things in the country. From, I think, you know, talk of, I think a lot of ways are coming from outside the country. So this is the kind of, you know, intervention that young people are actually engaging in. You know, so that they can also sustain the informal sector. As they are quite aware that I think we are not producing anything in our industry at the moment. So the fact that Zimbabwe has become a very big supermarket for a lot of things that are coming from as far afield as China, Malaysia, and so forth. So whatever you are seeing, you know, the trading in the streets, whatever is there, starting from even the Vicks to Treat Flu, is actually something that is coming from outside. So these are the things that are actually, you know, sustaining young people at the present moment so that they can actually be able to see the light of day come the next day.
Do youth understand that, you know, even in this informal sector, they're actually maintaining a business practice? They're actually, you know, when you go to business school, you learn basic business 101, but they're imploring that without even knowing the basics of business school. Is there a way to cultivate this once the economy gets better so that these guys can essentially hone their skills that they've learned from this situation?
That's very true. I think it's said that we are learning quite very important survival lessons and tactics from these hard times. As we are rightly pointing out, to say that I think there are a lot of things that we are learning to say, how can we also sustain ourselves, in the face of economic challenges. So I think once the economy is able to go on its knees, I think Zimbabwe is going to become one of the most vibrant economies that is sustained by, youth entrepreneurship at various levels. What I think this is testament to, youth entrepreneurship. Young people are able to engage into this, businesses, and then they are able to sustain themselves and also even the extended structure at a certain extent. So I would want to agree with you that I think we are learning quite a lot. Some of the things, they are not straightforward from the books, but I think there are some tactics that can also be able to be used, or rather to be employed at a larger scale to assist, the performance of the economy, and also, I think, widen the breadth of the employment base in the country. So I think there are quite very good lessons that we can take. In fact, I think throughout history, we find that very good lessons would actually come during hard times. And this is no exception in our country.
And moving forward, of course, I know your organization, Youth Forum, has been engaging youth, also working with them. Looking at the issue of unemployment, what do you hope can happen as Zimbabwe continues to move forward to go back to that growth that we had?
Yes, I think one thing that we are hoping for is that the much-touted Zimbabwe agenda for sustainable socio-economic transformation is going to bring about some results. But I think the biggest setback at the present moment is that it has been, punctuated by a lot of, unsavory cases of government-instigated corruption. So we find that I think in as much as we really would want to see a turnaround, we really would want to see young people being quite very active in a normal, economic, situation. But I think the biggest setback at the present moment is that we are faced with a government that seems to be quite clueless in terms of how they can take out the country from the current economic quagmire.
Wellington, thank you so much as usual for joining me today on the Youth Forum.
Okay, welcome.
You were listening to the Youth Forum, your forum focusing on your issues. This is Tatenda Gumbo, and make sure you join me next time. Treat me like a puppet on a string.
Well, music from the heart there from reggae legend Bob Marley. I don't want to wait in vain for your love. Coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. and taking us to the end of the English Bulletin. And now I hand you over into the capable hands of Sitandekile Mhlanga. That's the news in English from Studio 7 this Sunday evening, May 4th, 2014. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.